This is WordPress Weekly, the show dedicated to all things WordPress. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Sarah Gooding.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 147 of WordPress Weekly for Friday, April 25th, 2014. I am your host, Jeff Chandler, and today I am flying solo. So there is no beautiful co-host, whether that be Marcus or Sarah. I'm going to fly solo here, see how it goes. Before we get to our special guest today, I want to get you through a couple headlines for the week. Last week, I wrote an article about the advanced image editing properties in WordPress and how they contributed to WordPress theme lock-in. When WordPress 3.9 was released, it turns out that the advanced image editing properties had a way for users to apply an image border and to apply image margins, or some people like to call padding. And that was removed in WordPress 3.9. Turns out a lot of people use that because it made it very easy to apply those changes without using CSS. As I investigated this issue, why it was removed, and in fact, there's a plugin now that's been made available by Gregory Cornelius, and it actually enhances the options that were already there. Now you could do image width, color, and you could do image margins for all four directions, left, top, right, and bottom. But the more I looked into it, the more I wondered if this was actually, that this is sort of one of those bad behaviors that WordPress encouraged. You know, in my opinion, I think that these options should have never existed in WordPress to begin with. I think that it's theme territory, and that image paddings, widths, anything dealing with the content should be handled within the theme itself. And the whole notion of the article was, if you use these options in WordPress within the media library, the changes are saved to the image into the database, and if you were to switch a theme or switch to a different theme with different colors or whatnot, there's the possibility that the images would be wouldn't look as good because maybe you applied a border color that doesn't look right in that new theme. So that's where the whole notion of theme lock-in comes in, and you can't make changes to those images all at once through CSS because you have to edit them individually and change their settings for each image in the database through the media library. So on the one hand, I can see why so many users are upset and complaining and really want to see those features added back to WordPress because it provides an easy way to make those changes without having to learn or know CSS or create a child theme or any of that mess. But at the same time, I think that if those options were to be added back into WordPress, that it would be as if WordPress is continuing to encourage this type of bad behavior. So I'm torn on the subject. I'm not sure what the wrong or right way is. I still think it's theme territory. But for anyone that wants to have those options available, if that's the way you want to go about, you know, adding image borders and colors and dealing with image padding, then there's a plugin out there called Advanced Image Styles by Gregory Cornelius. And install that and you'll be ready to go. So curious to hear about what you think in the comments within the show notes of the post. We've had a lot of comments on that article so far. And as I said, I'm sort of torn now after reading everybody's insight into the subject. Other than that, ThemeLab website, WordPress Weed Storage, that's been around for about 6 years now, was acquired by Syed Balki. He's a developer of behind WPBeginner.com, List25, and some other successful ventures on the internet. ThemeLab, you know, has been around for about 6 years now, and by Leland Fiegel, and he wrote about he pinned things in the WordPress community. He released a number of free themes and made those available. Made a name for himself, and congratulations to him on selling to Syed for an undisclosed amount, apparently. And I actually interviewed both gentlemen the other night on a special episode of, I don't know if you want to call it WordPress Weekly, but I'll have that interview published sometime today on WPTavern.com. And they tell me what's next for the site and what the future plans are with regarding to ThemeLab. Let's see, and there's a survey available now. If you there's a WordPress contributor experience survey made available. We wrote about this on wbtavern.com. It was announced on the community make.wordpress.org community website, and basically it asked a few questions on how the contributor experience can be improved and how contributors their contributions can be more valued. So if you have contributed before, especially for first-time contributors, definitely take the survey, let your thoughts known. And yeah, so there's that. And one other thing I wanted to talk about here that came up earlier this week, this is something that's been talked about over the years throughout the WordPress community, the whole notion of a commercial plugin, a business based on a commercial plugin being ruined if said commercial plugin or most of its functionality was added to the core of WordPress. It's something that is definitely, you know, it's a possibility, but it's rare. I wrote a post on wptavern.com that explains why WordPress can't kill commercial plugin businesses. And just for example, I take Gravity Forms as an example. If you take something like Gravity Forms and you merged it into the core of WordPress, A, it would probably be stripped down to its most generic functionality because WordPress powers 20% of the web. It has a huge user base, so they anything that's added to core pretty much has to be generic. And then they add, you know, through the API hooks and filters and everything like that, you know, provides developers ways for build on top of that generic functionality. But you're not going to see something like Gravity Forms just merged as is right into WordPress. That just doesn't make any sense because it's a product that fulfills a specific niche with specific functionality, and it just doesn't make sense to just merge that right into WordPress with such a wide user base. And Carl Hancock, he actually wrote a comment on the article, which was originally published by Lane Polson, and he says that I quote, to me, a viable commercial product is just that, a product, not a feature. If something is more of a feature, then unless it's part of a collection of offerings, it could be dicey to rely on it as a commercial plugin. Features aren't products, end quote. That was by Carl Hancock, and I fully agree with him. And I think commercial plugins that are just glorified features are more at risk of being added to the core rather than full-fledged products. But regardless of either camp that you're in, merging existing plugins in the core is not really a routine task. It's something that, you know, rarely happens outside of the whole features as plugins first model. So at the end of the day, it's something that you should think about as a commercial, you know, if your business is based on a commercial plugin, it's something that you should have in the back of your mind, but it's definitely not something you should be worrying about every day. So I just don't think that commercial plugin businesses are easily going to be killed by having functionality added to WordPress. It just doesn't seem to happen on a routine basis. So those are just some of the headlines that we wrote about during this week. I want to bring on our special guest. His name is Jafe Thompson, and he is a web developer who specializes in WordPress. He currently works for X-Team, a development agency. He also contributes to WordPress Core and various other WordPress-related projects. And we're going to be speaking with him today basically to get some inside knowledge on his previous experience working for Envato. And Jafe, thank you very much for taking some time out of your schedule to be on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. It's great to talk to you.
So tell us where you're at and what time it is right now.
I'm in Tasmania, Australia, and it's 10 past 5 in the morning right now.
Wow. That's my apologies. hopefully the show was worth it to you to be getting up that early.
For sure, yeah. In fact, Siobhan McKeown tweeted recently saying that she's in a time zone where basically all the people she normally asks for help aren't currently online, and I guess she must be in the Australian time zone. It's just so out of kilter with everybody else.
Yes, it is. So being located in Australia, what's the WordPress scene like down in that area? are there a lot of people around near you? You know, do you have a lot of meetups that you can go to, or what's it like in the area that you're located?
I run the local meetup here in Hobart, and WordCamps are a lot of fun, actually. There's a kind of, we get a pretty good turnout, you know, a couple hundred people at each WordCamp, but the kind of organizers, and there's kind of a core group of people where whenever we see each other at a WordCamp, it's kind of like a family reunion. Like, we actually, it's just like, oh, hey, and we all go have drinks together, and you know, it's great because you can kind of, I think it really helps the welcoming vibe of the WordCamp overall. Yeah, it's good fun.
So I know here in the U.S. and in some other areas, the population is sort of distributed across the entire country. And we have all these different WordCamps that are, you know, within an hour to maybe 5-6 hour flight. But as I understand it, due to the geography and population density in Australia, I think most of the population is on the coastline, right?
Yeah, on the east coast mostly, yeah.
So I know you guys have had WordCamp Melbourne and WordCamp Sydney just up and down the coast there, and that must be – I wouldn't mind going to a WordCamp down under. That must be a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, it's pretty good. We had WordCamp Gold Coast, I think, is another one that we've had. We're looking to maybe have probably a WordCamp Brisbane sometime in the next 12 months. But we only have one, maybe two WordCamps a year, really, in Australia.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your WordPress origin story. How did you get started tinkering around with WordPress?
Sure. So I worked for web development agencies for most of my career, and it just kind of became apparent that to build websites for clients and businesses, most of the time the functionality that they need is pretty common across the businesses, and looking for something that was a good starting place and not having to build the same sort of stuff from scratch all the time and creating a maintenance burden for yourself, I kind of thought, well, we've got to find something that's already built, that's open source, that we can kind of go, bam, we're already 80% of the way there, and we're just kind of, you know, build the rest on for this particular business. And so I had a look around for different tools, Drupal, Joomla, WordPress at the time, and I kind of championed WordPress because I could see a lot of good things about it. Online documentation, strong community, that kind of thing. And one of my colleagues was sort of championing Joomla, and we did a client side on each. And it was pretty much the client education process at the end that just went, yep, WordPress.
Wow.
And ever since, it's been WordPress, and I've sort of, for the rest of my career, I've changed a couple other agencies over to using WordPress instead of a
you've converted CMS. Them.
Yeah.
So about when you were tinkering and convinced about WordPress, about what version was that? Do you remember that you first got involved with WordPress?
I'd used it for my personal site a couple of year or so beforehand. And that would have been around about 2006 or 7, I think. So it might have been version 2
something, either 2.0, yeah, 2 something, because that's around the time of 2.2, 2.3.
Yeah, it was around about then.
So one of your, you used to work for Envato. You no longer work for them now. You work for a development agency called X-Team, which we'll get to here in a little while. But for the past 4 years, you've been working for Envato, which is a collection of marketplaces where...
Yeah, and tutorial sites as well.
Yeah. Tutorial sites where people could sell themes. There's Code Canyon where people could sell plugins. There is, I'm not sure the name of it offhand, but there's where you could hire freelancers.
Microlancer.
Microlancer, that is. That's it. So there's all these different areas, all these different marketplaces, and based on a post that was written by Kalis, I think back in December or January, it's impressive to me to see how much money is flowing through all of those marketplaces in total. It's a pretty neat story.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Even, you know, just imagine the stories you hear about what authors on ThemeForest are earning. When you work at Envato and you're seeing that stuff all the time, and you're seeing, you know, oh, this author's made it, is now an elite author where they've made over, I think that margin is like when they first get to the top sort of percentile on the profit sharing type thing. And it's just seeing how many of those people are coming in, and the top authors amounts are moving up. It's pretty crazy. And you think, oh, maybe just in my spare time I could build a theme. But then you also see the support burden that they have, and it's not something you can do in your spare time.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many articles I've read that shows ThemeForest theme author crosses $1 million in total sales. I'm thinking,
yeah,
I'm in the wrong business. What am I doing? I got to get on there and start selling themes, because it's just nothing but there's nothing but money to be had over there.
Yeah,
but then absolutely. I think about it again, it's like, maybe not.
Yeah, there's one author who he crossed 1 million, and then he's crossed 2 million, and I think,
wow,
it must be around about this time of year last year that he crossed the 2 million, so I wouldn't be shocked to see him pass 3 million sometime soon.
And then the thing about it is, most of the time, when you read these stories about those who cross the $1 million sales barrier, it's sometimes you think it's one individual, but then you find out it's like this agency of made up of 14 or 15 people. Usually it's not just one person, you know, doing everything and making $1 million.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that sort of breakdown. Often it's it is kind of a more than one person. Sometimes it is just one person. Sometimes it's one guy and he's maybe hired a couple other people to do support and stuff like that. And then other times it's a husband and wife team or maybe an agency that kind of decided that this is a part of their business model as well. Yeah, it's pretty interesting to see the wide range of people that do it.
So one of your roles at Envato was titled WordPress Evangelist. Now, what does a WordPress evangelist do?
Yeah. Well, basically, the idea was that I just kind of liaise between Envato and the WordPress community. So helping to make sure that stuff was communicated from Envato to the community in a clear way, and making sure that anything that we did at Envato was sort of factoring in the WordPress community. You know, Envato, the marketplaces are built on Ruby on Rails. There's not a lot of sort of WordPress developers in-house at Envato. And so, you know, the different open source communities operate in different ways, and having someone in-house who knows the community well and knows how to communicate with the community and can champion community issues within the company was... Yeah, that was basically me.
And by being that liaison, how difficult of a job was that for you? Was that challenging, or was it just natural to you? Was it fun?
Both. Yeah, the job kind of came around by me talking to Collis. It wasn't that long after the there was a blog post by Mike McAllister, I think, about is ThemeForest the redheaded stepchild of the theme marketplaces or something like that. And kind of, I think it was around about that point that Collis went, oh, you know, like the WordPress community, maybe not everyone's super happy with the way we're doing things. And I'd worked at Envato for a little bit at that point. I was doing support while I was traveling. And I could see that the way the WordPress community viewed ThemeForest and Envato was nothing like the way that Envato viewed itself internally. There's this kind of, you know, Envato was very much about helping people find ways to educate themselves and make money online and kind of, you know, that kind of life-changing ability for someone to be able to do their dream job and actually feed their family at the same time. It was kind of Envato's way of thinking. And then you had the WordPress community that kind of went, you guys are just out to make a quick buck. And that was like not at all how Envato saw itself. And so I said to Colas, I think you really need someone to kind of be a bridge between you guys and the WordPress community, and kind of you're not communicating clearly what it is you're trying to do because they have this impression of you. And Colas is like, yes, I kind of noticed that with this post. Let's do that.
Awesome. I mean, like you said, I've from someone that covers WordPress and reads a lot of WordPress news and reads a lot of WordPress posts, now I'll come right out and say that the perception of ThemeForest is it's just a theme marketplace that has a bunch of beautifully coded crap. I mean, that's the perception that I see. That's the perception I hear quite often. Seems to be the so-called reputation of ThemeForest of being filled with bloated, terribly coded themes. And with your tenure, Envato, there's some important things that have gone on within the past 2 or 3 years. What steps did you take to try and change this perception?
Yeah. So there are a few different things that I wanted to achieve in my role at Envato, and basically I've kind of achieved them as much as I could. One was to sort of keep on top of the various blog posts like you're talking about where people are, you know, kind of have this particularly negative perception, and make sure that I was sort of collecting that information and letting those people know that we were collecting that information so that we could do something about it. And also working on we have theme submission requirements. So while themes were being reviewed by the review team, the actual reviewing was maybe, you know, not consistent. And so we were trying to make sure that all, you know, best practices are being checked for and that the reviewers were reviewing consistently, at least from a code point of view, so that when you saw some theme that you thought, wow, that thing is beautiful, I want that on my website, you didn't download it and then go, wait a minute, it's in queuing 5 different versions of jQuery, what's going on?
And the idea of a theme submission guidelines and review process, was that at all inspired by what was taking place on WordPress.org and their theme repository, since we have volunteers that review themes and they have to have be coded and have certain functionality requirements, and then, you know, they're allowed to be on the repo. Was that an inspiration towards what you were trying to achieve on ThemeForest, so that both repositories were sort of matched up?
Yeah, in a way. It was kind of an inspiration in as much as it's a logical thing to do, and that they had done it, and that was good to use that as kind of a basis. There's some slightly different things that you check for in a commercial environment versus that environment, but we did use that as a basis for those theme submission requirements, and also making those theme submission requirements public. So that it made the process a bit easier for, authors submitting things. They're not just submitting it and hoping and then getting rejected. They actually can go through a checklist and go, yep, I've done all that stuff, and then submit, which kind of relieves the burden on review a little bit so that they can focus on, you know, really making sure that this stuff is happening properly when things are submitted.
And did you receive any blowback from the ThemeForest community when you announced the WordPress theme submission requirements? And how difficult were those to come up with and then implement?
Well, they weren't super difficult to come up with. The only problem was, you know, there were a couple of things that were a little bit divisive. If we spent a lot of time debating which way to go on something. Mm-hmm. And those were also the things that kind of, I guess, if you could call it blowback, we got certainly a lot of feedback from the community that they weren't necessarily happy with, or that they didn't completely understand why there were requirements a lot of the time. And that was mainly to do with things like And these aren't. This isn't actually a part of the requirements as yet either. Is things like separating more complex functionality into plugins instead of having it built baked into the theme and stuff like that.
It's interesting that you talk about that subject at that time because it's funny if you see all those blogs. And by the way, you did a good job sort of monitoring the feedback on ThemeForest, because just about every post I would see, you were in the top five comments of saying, hey, thanks for the feedback, and you know, I've wrote it down, and you seem to be on the ball with that. Here on the Tavern, we've been talking about this notion of theme lock-in, whether it be through custom post types, short codes, or bundling specific functionality into the theme that probably would be better placed into a plugin or supporting the plugin that already existed for that functionality. And we've been talking a lot about that. And we've had a couple of people on the air, like Jonathan Atkinson, for example, who does creative. And he understands the notion and perception that people have of ThemeForest, but he's actually trying to do things the right way, supporting plugins, building in support for plugins that do, whether it's portfolios or churches or things in that nature, instead of putting everything into the theme itself, so that, you know, it's a great user experience. You just turn it on, and the theme focuses on the presentation of content. So just interesting that we've been talking about that, and we're starting to see a lot of theme shops, whether they're on ThemeForest or not, sort of go back to keeping things simple and removing functionality from their themes and just moving it into a plugin, which is something that should have been done all along, but because you know customers demanded options and sliders and everything under the sun, that's what they were creating, developing, and releasing to customers. But at the end of the day, those themes were generating such a support burden on them that in some cases almost put companies out of business.
Yeah. I get a lot of time for Mike McAllister, Chris Molitor, and Jake Caputo. Those guys in particular I've kind of talked to quite a bit about this stuff, and that they are all very much, you know, they're ThemeForest authors, or you know, they were until Mike has closed down the ThemeForest side of things and rebranded as Array. But they all wanted to kind of do that kind of thing, you know, simplify things a bit, go a bit more with the decisions, not options kind of mantra, and, you know, do things, I guess, in a more sustainable way. I think part of the problem is also that these theme developers often come in from a design background, and so they want to get X functionality into their theme, and they're not a developer, and they kind of go, oh, I'm not sure what the best way to do this is. I use this plugin, and I'll bundle it in, and I'll go that way. And then you get other times where they go to the plugin author, and they say, hey, I want to put your premium plugin. I'd like to buy a developer license and distribute that with my theme. And then that plugin developer says, no, you can't do that, because that's stealing all my customers, basically. If you're going to use it, you have to bundle it into your theme so that it's not separable. And that's a trickier one to get around.
Yeah, we almost jokingly say that there should be a requirement on ThemeForest that says only one slider allowed, not 10. You know, there's one theme on ThemeForest that has, man, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but it can do all these different things. Like, it has all these different sliders, all these different layouts, all these different color schemes, and for whatever reason, it's selling really well, but it's a support nightmare because it's just too much. But
is it UDesign or?
Well, I don't know. That might be it. But at the same time, these theme authors on ThemeForest, they're creating these themes with all this functionality and all these sliders because customers demand it. This is what they want. So I don't place all the blame for the theme situation on the theme authors, because they're just creating solutions for their clients. But really, you know, we need to see more theme developers get smarter and, you know, and educate their customers and say, no, this isn't really what you need, because, you know, it's a support nightmare.
And that's the tricky thing with a marketplace, right? I mean, you might have you might be selling a theme, like, and I think this is a part of the reason from Mike McAllister's blog post when he sort of launched Array. Part of the reason he's moving away is to get a different type of customer, because he didn't want to put all these options in, but that's what a theme forest customer wants. So he's getting to somewhere like, you know, focus more on WordPress.com and things like that, where they a little bit more focused on blogging. But I mean, how do you say that in a marketplace environment? No, I'm not going to add that feature, when there is, like, you know, 100 other guys who already have it in their theme.
Exactly. Right. And it's, you know, that pretty much sums up the problem right there, where this guy has a theme with three sliders. Well, guess what? I'm going to release a theme that has five sliders. That makes me better than this theme. And
yeah,
of course, we see the end result. Themes that have too much of everything.
Yeah, I see UDesign has seven sliders. That's pretty crazy. I think it's a bit of a mutually assured destruction type of a scenario, where even if all 100 of those theme authors wanted to stop doing too many features, they can't unless they all do it at the same time.
Right. Right. Great point. So obviously we already covered, you know, if you take a look at Mike McAllister and some others, it seems like within the past year there's been quite a few top Theme Forest authors moving off to their own theme shops. So you basically think it's to probably aim towards a different customer that they're not getting on Theme Forest, right?
Yeah, I think it's partly that, and partly I know from speaking to some of them that support wasn't scalable for them. You know, Pippin Williamson has said before, he started doing plugins on Code Canyon, and now he's kind of focused more on easy digital downloads and that kind of stuff. And that's partly, I think, because of support. And it's just, yeah. But I mean, there's still over 4,000 themes on ThemeForest. So for everyone that leaves, there seems to be another five waiting to jump in.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to sell themes, it almost seems like, especially if you're just getting started, it seems like it make no sense to not, you know, sell your themes on ThemeForest, because they already have the marketplace, they already have the customers, and they already have the marketing. So just, hey, if you're getting started in to sell themes, it seems like it'd just be natural to use ThemeForest as a stepping stone and just, you know, use them for a while, and then, you know, maybe at some point if you grow to a certain size, then maybe it sort of makes more sense to move things off of ThemeForest to do things on your own.
Yeah,
it seems like a lot of people are using ThemeForest that way.
Yeah, use it to kind of bring the customers in, learn, and be able to kind of scale up to a point where they feel they can move out on their own. Yeah, it seems like a few people are doing that. Not heaps, but yeah, there's a couple.
One of the pivotal moments during your time at Envato was this the notion of the GPL. You know, I have to bring that up because it was a pretty pivotal moment for what happened at Envato and ThemeForest themes and providing the choice to theme sellers to allow to choose 100% GPL. So take us back to around January of 2013 when a lot of discussion was happening around Jake Caputo, who is a lead theme author, and he was not allowed to be at WordCamp since he sold themes on ThemeForest that were not GPL compatible.
He was allowed to be there, but he wasn't allowed to help organize.
Right, okay. And as part of the educational experience, you attended the first WordPress Community Summit. So I'm just wondering, what did you learn about the GPL at that summit?
I didn't really learn anything new particularly at that summit about the GPL. I kind of pretty well across the GPL myself. But what I did learn is just kind of, I guess I got to sit down and have a chat with Matt Mullenweg and talk about what his sort of take on that scenario is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of interesting, I guess. But mostly I kind of thought from that, I wouldn't be too surprised if at some point in the near future these guys decide that. So it had been the case since sometime in 2011 that, you know, Envato was no longer allowed to speak at, sponsor, or organise WordCamps. I spoke at WordCamp Melbourne in 2011 before I started with Envato, and a couple of other Envato people spoke there. But then when I spoke at WordCamp Gold Coast in the second half of 2011, I had just started at Envato not long before the WordCamp, but after I had become a speaker. And so I had to get kind of special permission to speak there because at that point Envato was no longer allowed to speak. And that was because of the fact that they were allowing people to sell, well, that people were selling on ThemeForest under a split license.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that was...
And that may always be an area of contention because the Freedom Software Law Center post, which was added to WordPress.org, says that you are GPL compatible if you do a split license. You know, there is a split license for the GPL for PHP code and for other assets such as CSS and images. That is allowed, but yeah. Matt Mullenweg only wants to promote and advocate things that are 100% GPL.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was the big...
was the problem.
Yes, on ThemeForest.
Yeah, so I kind of, after the community summit, I thought I wouldn't be surprised if these restrictions that are on Envato are also imposed on, you know, ThemeForest authors sometime soon. And so then that
happened. That's what happened.
yeah, and so, you know, that was kind of...
And Jake just happened to be an elite author.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it was probably mainly the fact that Collis hadn't realized, I guess, that there wasn't a choice so much. Like you say before, you know, if someone wants to start out as a theme author, it's a bit of a no-brainer to start out at least on ThemeForest, right? It's where all the, you know, there's a lot of buyers there. And so Collis kind of hadn't really realized that it's not really a choice in a way about using ThemeForest. If you want to get started, it's kind of the only choice, or at least it was at that point. And so with that kind of in mind, he thought, well, the line before that was, if you want to be 100% GPL, that's fine. You can totally be 100% GPL. You just can't do it on ThemeForest. You can do it somewhere else. But yeah, when he realized that it was almost non-optional, then he's like, well, okay, yeah. To be fair, then, you know, we can make an option. So if people want to be 100% GPL on ThemeForest, they can. And, you know, there are a lot of comments going around in the various blog posts at that time. And
It was a pivotal moment. It was like Matt Mullenweg and company and his beliefs versus Envato. And there were people on both sides. And I got to say, looking back in it now, Collis really handled the situation really well with the initial blog post and then creating the poll and asking his community of authors if they would, you know, how many of them are interested in selling their themes as 100% GPL and what they think of it, and then releasing another blog post and being transparent on everything and sort of coming to grips with what he's learned, and now he's going to provide the option. He really did a stellar job of communicating and working with his community to come up with a solution to the problem.
Yeah, yeah. Collis is such a genuine and genuinely nice guy. I think that really comes across in the way he communicates, yeah.
So the option was added. even if theme sellers label their themes as 100% GPL, and I was checking on this earlier today, there's still no easy way to locate them that I know of. There's no, like, option or category. So I'm just wondering, do you know if the team is working on a solution or was working on a solution before you left?
In terms of making it more visible, who is and isn't GPL?
Yeah. Like, is, you know, just making an easy way to search themes just by GPL, you know, how they're licensed. Because it turns out that you have to, in order to actually find themes that are 100% GPL labeled on ThemeForest, you have to do this special search query in Google in order to
Google
find them.
Yeah, Google site search.
Yes. Yeah.
And look for the phrase. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't think there's any particular focus on that at the moment. There's a lot, as I'm sure you can imagine, with a marketplace of You know, there's like 8 different marketplaces at the moment. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things to be doing, and I don't think, you know, WordPress themes are just one component of that, and I don't think there's a priority to make that searchable. The main reason for doing it really was to alleviate the authors who were, particularly Jake and, you know, Pippin,
right,
potentially, who would have problems in a scenario where they wanted to be helping organize a WordCamp and they weren't able to. So one of the comments on those blog posts at the time was from Matt Mullenweg saying, if there was a 100% GPL option, authors who chose that option would be, you know, allowed to still participate at that level. So Carlos added the option, and yeah, so now Jake is freely able to help organize, you know, WordCamp Chicago and those kinds of things.
Yeah, and just as a general observation, and maybe Carlos might be listening to this, I don't know, but if he is, you know, I noticed on browsing themes that were 100% GPL that ThemeForest has different licenses, such as regular and extended, etc. And I thought it was confusing to see an item listed as 100% GPL, but then read the terms of the regular license and see conflicting information, even though some GPL information was within that regular license. I'm thinking that with all the freedoms that the GPL allows, if there's 100% GPL, that the regular license link shouldn't be displayed because it displays conflicting information. So I just think that would add in the clarity in terms of what you can and can't do with the theme.
Yeah, well, I mean, that part of that is just the way that legal stuff works.
Okay.
So, like, the regular license and the extended license that are offered are the other two licenses. And really, the 100% GPL items, it's actually a clause within the regular license that gives way to the GPL.
Mm-hmm.
So really, they are still under the regular license. But then there's basically a clause within the regular license that says if the author has nominated that this item be 100% GPL, then the GPL overrides anything in this license. Yeah.
Okay. It just seems a little confusing to me, but, you know, that explanation, you know, helps me understand why it's there. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So Justin Tadlock, I think you know who he is. He had an interesting experiment where he created a theme and he went on the ThemeForest for 1 year. And the whole gist of the experiment was to try and show theme authors that you could be successful selling themes that did things the right way. The right way meaning, you know, certain standards and certain ways of coding things, developing things that is, you know, acceptable coding standards with WordPress, and he wanted to try and change things from the inside. And he released some pretty interesting results from his experiment. I just wanted to know, what's your take on what you saw from his experiment 1 year into ThemeForest? And did you take anything that he said in his experiment and maybe acted upon it within ThemeForest to improve it?
Yeah, well, one of the things he released a theme called Unique, which I think maybe you can is still available, just not on ThemeForest anymore. And he also sort of released a handful of open source plugins with the idea that sort of encourage theme authors to go, well, instead of baking in, you know, grid shortcodes or you know, whatever else, you can use this plugin, and then if everybody used it, then they wouldn't need to have that stuff baked into their theme, and the plugin itself would become better and all that kind of stuff. And I thought that was a fantastic sort of way of thinking, and I was really appreciative that someone else was kind of putting in the time to help educate ThemeForest authors on that stuff. Ultimately, though, I mean, his experiment was to show that you could be successful, and I think he made enough money to buy himself a new laptop or something, which is cool.
yeah, without advertising and marketing.
Yeah, but he only made like 100 sales or so, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you see that some of the other themes that are around, 100 sales in that is not that much. So I don't know whether he. You know, you look at Avada, which is the top-selling theme on on Envato, the theme forest, and that's made, you know, nearly 66,000 sales.
Wow.
And that hasn't been, that was, I'm not sure whether that was even around when Justin released his theme.
But the whole notion of going on the inside and trying to change the opinions from the inside and just say, hey, look at these examples. This can be done. It's the proper way to do things, and, you know, you can be successful doing it. But I think it was a noble cause on his part, but I don't think a lot of theme authors are going to do things in that way just because customers don't want that. You know, they're going to sell whatever makes money.
Yeah, exactly. And incidentally, I just checked, and Avada was released the month before Justin's theme was released.
There you go. 66,000 sales.
Yeah, versus 99.
Cha-ching.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's one of the examples of those theme authors where they do have a lot of options in there. And it's kind of, it's just servicing a different group of people than, you know, someone like Justin or I mean, Mike makes great sales or made great sales on the themes he had on Theme Forest. I thought, from my perspective anyway, I remember doing the math on them before and going, man, if I could just make a bloke theme like that.
You could just sit back and roll in the money.
Exactly. It was something like that. But it's just a different kind of user. And when we started working on the theme submission requirements, Muhammad Harris, the developer behind Avada, was one of the authors who initially, his like first gut reaction was like, whoa, hang on a minute, this is, I'm not sure if I like this. But he, once explained, he actually has been like one of the biggest supporters of theme submission requirements and, you know, putting in proper best practices and all that kind of stuff, which has been interesting considering this kind of notion of reducing the number of options and things. And then you see Avada and he's actually, they've got a lot of options really, but he's a big sort of proponent for making the standards and coding best practices and all that stuff better in theme forest themes.
So over the past 4 years, a lot has changed in the WordPress community and in Envato, the marketplaces and theme forest. Sort of looking back, is there anything that sort of surprises you or shocks you in terms of how things came to be?
Interesting question. Anything, really?
Anything you look at and say, you know, I didn't think it would go in that direction, or I didn't think that's how it would turn out, but that's how it turned out.
No, not really, actually. There's not really anything that was surprising. Most of it's kind of like, yeah, I can, you know, you can see a bit beforehand that this is the direction things are going, and, you know, you kind of, there's nothing really super surprising in that way. What I would have been surprised about is if things had gone differently. You know, if things had gone differently about the GPL option before, and I would have been shocked if Matt had just said, no, it's not a problem, don't worry about it. And I also would have been shocked if Colas had said, all right, Theme Forest is now 100% GPL. Because that's not really possible for Theme Forest, right? You know, if you get an author releases an HTML template on Theme Forest, and, you know, there's no reason for them to make that 100% GPL. Mm-hmm. And then they make it into a WordPress theme. It kind of makes it a little bit complicated about, wait, so if they make a WordPress theme and that is 100% GPL, does that mean that the HTML site template is now 100% GPL?
So you're starting to hurt my head, Jabe.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so for an author to have to contemplate some of this stuff, it's a bit like, wow, I don't know if I want to, you know, if they made a PSD and put it on Graphic River and then they make a WordPress theme out of that PSD, does that mean that PSD now has to be 100% GPL because that's the images and stuff, right? So it kind of, yeah, hurts your head, hurts their head, hurts everybody's head.
Looking back, what's the thing you're most proud of with your work at Envato?
Oh, probably I would say that the general perception of Envato these days is different than it was before I started. And while obviously I can't take 100% credit for that, I like to think that I was an influence there, and I'm proud of that.
I think you were. I think just by having that liaison, having someone that says, hey, you're right. We're going to take your feedback. We're going to use it and improve the experience. Here's what we're doing. You started the theme review submission process. There's a lot of people outside of Envato that, was vouching and said, ThemeForest needs something similar that we have to WordPress.org with a theme review process. That way, certain guidelines are inherited or being used, so themes have sort of this baseline of acceptable functionality, and it's done in the right way. I think you did a good job changing the perception, just being that liaison and communicating what the outside community is saying to the people on the inside. I mean, that's pretty important.
Yeah, thanks. It's nice to hear that, and it was good to feel like I kind of achieved that before leaving Envato and moving on to X Team, and not feeling like I'd left a job half finished. I mean, there's still a ways to go, but it was time for me to do something different.
So Casper's in the chat room wants to know, do you think a WordPress theme with just the standard theme customizer and a great design could be successful on ThemeForest? No bloated options, sliders, short codes, just the customizer and just the design.
Yeah, I do. And I think, like Mike McAllister, like some of his themes were exactly that, right? And he seems to have been doing well enough to decide that he's going to go out on his own. Yeah, and there's some, there are people still left. And I noticed Adam Pickering's in the chat room, and he's certainly one of those authors who has decided to make fairly kind of niche themes, but they use a plugin to get, the lion's share of that functionality in instead of stuffing it onto the theme, which is fantastic. And I really appreciated Adam's support in that too.
So speaking of X Team, what is X Team and why did you leave Envato to join them? What are you going to be doing for X Team?
Yeah. So X Team is kind of a, they're one of the VIP partners, WordPress.com VIP partners, and they do a lot of development work for some fantastic clients and stuff. But the thing that really excited me is you may have seen their plugins called Stream on the WordPress.org directory.
It's a very cool plugin. It's like allows you to see sort of all the activity that's going on your site.
Yeah, exactly. And I know Sarah did a post on WP Tavern about it when it was first released, back in December.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the idea of it. It was something that I could really see had been kind of missing, is you can jump into your WordPress site and you can kind of look at your post revisions, but who knows what else happened on your website while you weren't there, right? Particularly mm-hmm. if you've got a team of authors, after running WP Tuts and seeing what it's like to have a team of authors who are all in there doing stuff, and who made what change to what setting and things like that. Stream just being able to show you that stuff is just amazing. I had actually when I was considering maybe I should release something on Code Canyon or ThemeForest, I was thinking about making a plugin that did something similar to release on Code Canyon, and then I saw Stream, and I'm like, oh, amazing, I don't need to make that anymore. This thing is awesome. And so I then got the opportunity to kind of join those guys. They kind of approached me and said, we have this plugin, and we're wanting to build a business around it and, release some kind of premium stuff. We've got some extensions coming, this weekend sometime. The most of the team is at WordCamp Austin.
Yeah, and why are you there with them?
Yeah, I was supposed to be, but it's my daughter's first birthday tomorrow. Can't miss that, man. She's never going to have another first birthday. So
that's right.
So I kind of sadly was not able to be there. I tried to get WordCamp Austin to kind of, you know, move so that I could come, but they were pretty fixed to their timeline, so.
Yeah, I've never heard of X-Team. When I saw the announcement post that you were leaving Envato and joining X-Team, I'm like, who's X-Team? Is that like a band of WordPress superheroes or something? And so I started looking, and Topher, I know Topher, he's on there, and he's he does work for OS Training, some great stuff, tutorials and videos there. And Weston, he is the one of the people responsible for the live widget previews in WordPress 3.9. So you got some talented individuals there on X-Team.
Yeah, and Frankie Jarrett as well, who I think is kind of basically the, your stream is essentially his brainchild, and just being able to get in with those guys and work on something, you know, I didn't get a great deal of time for development work in my Envato role, and so getting really back heavily into development is something that I wanted to do, and working on a product that I was passionate about was important to me, not just working for an agency doing client sites, which is fine, but I've been doing that for, you know, somewhere near quite over a decade, right? So I thought it's time to focus on a product and something that I'm really invested in and passionate about. And so, yeah, stream is that. And this weekend there'll be premium extensions available, so you can get all sorts of extra features to stream that might not otherwise be possible. But that'll be announced this weekend. So we'll have things like, you know, notifications, so you can get push notifications for customized events that happen on stream, and various other things. But it's pretty exciting.
Well, that's pretty cool. A new place, new area, new things to develop, new things to work on. You don't have to be a liaison anymore. You could just sort of get that burden off your chest. You could just create things and develop and interact with the community you support that way, and probably offers you an opportunity to go to more WordCamps. And speaking of WordCamps, you going to any in the near future?
Yeah, I'll be at WordCamp Miami. We're kind of hoping there'll be quite a bit of the team actually from stream there, so we'll be able to chat with people about stream, and we will have all the premium stuff will be up and running well and truly by then, and we may even have added another extension or two, who knows, but that'll be cool. I'll probably be at WordCamp Sydney this year as well, which I don't think they've announced dates yet, but that will be later this year, and I should be at WordCamp San Francisco this year too.
Awesome. I will be at WordCamp Miami here in about 2 weeks, I think. So it'll be awesome to finally get to meet you face-to-face. Because you being in Australia, me being here, you know, the chances of us meeting face-to-face, you know, aren't very great. So it'll be great to have it. Yeah, it doesn't happen often, and that'll be awesome. So we're going to wrap up the show here with the interview. One thing I noticed on your announcement post on your personal blog, which right now is having some web hosting issues, because I know you're in the process of moving it, but how did that make you feel on your announcement post when you read all the comments from people saying thank you for what you've done and for trying to make ThemeForest a better place, not only for theme authors and for users, but, you know, for everyone sort of outside the Envato marketplace in general, to see so many people appreciate the work and the effort you put into just trying to make things better.
Yeah, that was pretty nice. There's some warm fuzzy feelings there, that for sure. that was really good. It's nice to feel like, you know, when you have put in a few years into doing something that people noticed.
And obviously the changes that you try to implement or try to encourage, it's not like you had all the power, so I imagine you had to sort of present your case, and you know, you had to keep arguing for why the benefits of why these changes need to take place. I got to imagine it wasn't easy getting some of these things implemented.
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the Google Docs, you know, I've written up a kind of a proposal for putting the case forward for something, and then the and then given access to the various people that, you know, relevant people, and said, I'd like your thoughts on this and let's try and move forward. And then you've never seen such a crowded comments on the bar on the right hand side for some of those things, man.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, Jafe, I want to thank you personally for trying, for being the liaison. I know that Stephen Cronin now, I think, is going to take over your role at Envato.
Yes.
With being
similar role here.
Yeah, similar role, evangelist for Theme Forest. He's got quite a job ahead of him. So, but he seems like the type of guy that would do a good job to fulfill that role.
Yeah. He's actually going to be, I think his role is quality team lead for Theme Forest and Code Canyon. So,
okay.
You know, like while he'll be doing some of the, there'll be some crossover with what I was doing. He's specifically most interested in improving the quality. So that's pretty. That's pretty great, I think.
Awesome. So thank you for everything you've done, your contributions to both WordPress and to ThemeForest and the Envato Marketplace, trying to make things better for everyone involved. And I look forward to meeting you in Miami. And for everyone that wants to keep track on what you're doing and where you're at, sort of give us your information.
Sure. You can follow me. I'm at Jafe, J-A-P-H, on Twitter. And that's probably the best place to find me, really.
Awesome. So that was Jafe Thompson, formerly at Envato, now with X-Team. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of WordPress Weekly. Our next show will be next Friday, May 2nd, with special guest Siobhan McCune. And I hope I got that right. She's going to kill me if I got it wrong. But that does it for this week's edition. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes of WordPress Weekly on wptavern.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, that's J-E-F-F-R-0. And I will be at WordCamp North Canton next weekend. So if you happen to see me there, stop by, chat with me. I'm always up for conversing about WordPress. And until next week, have a safe weekend, everybody.